August.
The first.
Dun dun.
And where are you going? When are you coming home?
Gwen, your wife is calling.
And this is the cast of Macross Speaker Podcast here for another episode. This is your sometimes host, Gwen Campbell, otherwise known as Torture on the Boards. And to my left is...
Save Jet Lag Robotech. We're also known as Save. Just got back from the States, went to San Diego Comic Con. I'm tired.
Hi, tired. And to my far right is...
Renato. And I'm kind of tired as well. I've been working night and day.
What's your excuse?
Well, I've been shooting missiles with Itano.
Because that's cool Japan, man.
It's cool, man. Cool
Japan. So, yeah, we also have special guests. Quite a few special guests as of late. Everyone's dropping by Tokyo. Must be summer.
Yes.
Yeah, when everyone's in the area.
It's a cool thing to do.
So, we have Ken.
Hi. I'm Ken, a.k.a. Valkyrie.
So, you guys, so that's your handle on the boards, right?
Yes.
Valkyrie?
Yes. Okay. Which shows how early. Yeah, no, yes. No. How early you were on the boards.
This
like
is true.
First or second member of
the maybe, I don't know. But, yeah, I'm an early adopter and especially uncreative.
Yeah.
Well, well, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I'm going to presume this isn't your first time to Japan.
This is my third.
Third time. And what brings you to the neighborhood?
I try to come here whenever I can, which is few and far between. It's come out to about every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just good time every time.
And so this time around, I believe Wonderfest might have had something to do with your
decision. I've been wanting to come to Wonderfest for at least a decade now. And I had the chance, took it, finally made it happen.
All right. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. But first, as we do with all guests, can we ask people to tell us a bit about their first experience with Macross, how they got introduced to everything.
Okay.
And how their fandom... progressed. So by all means, give us tell us about yourself.
And progress it did. Okay. okay.
He's and used to this.
I'm listening.
And Adrian's asleep already.
I'm
this
not
is great.
Asleep, I'm just resting my eyes.
See, the thing is, we turn on the Macross 2 opening and he wakes up. And
okay. That's how it
that's
works.
That's you. I stay awake through all of Macross 2.
Anyways.
Okay. So I, like most, got introduced through Robotech, but kind of in a roundabout way. Somehow, it completely escaped me, circa 1985. I was always a Transformers kid, and I'm not sure I ever caught an episode on TV.
Really?
Yeah. So, I got introduced from a friend who was a couple years older than me. I think it was a friend of my sister or something like that. And he gave me a tape with the first maybe two episodes of Robotech on it. And I remember watching it and think, hey, that's pretty cool. But for some reason, I didn't really follow up on it. Fast forward close to a decade. I think it was junior year of high school. I had a friend who was way into role-playing games. And he had the Robotech role-playing book from Palladium. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of started flipping through it and kind of brought back memories of those, like, hey, that's the Veritech. That looks pretty cool. Just stuff like that. And I think it had like these little bits and pieces of information from the Japanese show, and just kind of wanted to know more about it. I ended up calling around to a bunch of different video stores, and I found one that had the old 6-volume set of the Macross Saga. And I didn't realize until quite a bit later that they were heavily edited, even by Robotech standards. You remember these guys?
As a family home entertainment?
Yeah.
They were edited?
Yes. Yeah. So, like, even each tape, they were recorded EP modes, so they were, like, 3 or 4 hours long each, probably more, maybe.
Really?
Yeah, and they only had, like, one opening and one ending per tape, and there were only 6 volumes. Can't believe I never heard about this.
Family home entertainment, but I'm sure I had... like 2 volumes of that.
Yeah,
but they weren't...
They later put out unedited ones. I think they did like 2 episodes per tape.
And that must have been them.
Yeah.
This had just 2, yeah.
Yeah, this is way later though.
Okay.
Let's see here. Eventually, after like years after I found those, I got back in touch with the guy who introduced me to it all those years ago with that first VHS tape. And he had the Southern Cross and Mos Pita volumes from the Palladium put out, two episodes per tape, and kind of got into there and just finished the set, watching those, record my own copies. And from there, I eventually just kind of stumbled my way onto the internet and found the with the news groups, LTV Robotech and Alt-Fan Macross.
So this is like mid-90s?
Yeah. It's probably circa 95 or something like that. Yeah, right around when Macross Plus was coming around, but before, probably before Manga licensed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. It was just around that time, and it was one of those things that I hear people talking about, and hear them talking like they're... It cost them like $100 to import this one VHS tape, and it was only half hour long or something like that. But they're ranting and raving how amazing it is. And it was probably quite a while long before before I found the manga tapes. And I think they mentioned one of the other recent episodes how long it took between episodes 3 and 4 and how excruciating that was.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, probably
that's,
somewhere
that's
like...
That's probably because... they lost the masters to the sound, had to reconstruct the soundtrack. That's another whole story.
Yeah, I remember the rumor at the time. I was in high school then. And what people were saying was that there was some kind of licensing dispute between episodes 3 and 4, but I don't know whether that was just...
I never heard that rumor at the time. I remember picking up an issue of... either Manga Mania, or maybe it had already become Manga Max by that time.
Oh, Manga Max! Was, that ran until like the early 2000s.
Jonathan Clements and Helen McCarthy doing their thing. And they had an article saying that it had to be... It was either destroyed or it was missing or something, and the soundtrack had to be completely reconstructed in Hollywood. So... I don't remember the exact wording of the article, but I came away thinking that, you know... It gave me an impression that they were actually improving it, the soundtrack.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I wasn't.
Not so much. But what killed me is, like, in just hearing this story and how they're reconstructing it and everything, they could have, I mean, the eventual final product, the subtitle version, had the original audio. So it made no sense. They could have put out the subtitle version a year earlier, even if they were still working on reconstructing the audio for the
dub. I guess, yeah. Well, that wouldn't have helped us, because we never got the subtitle version in the UK.
Yeah, we didn't in Australia either. The VHS Manga Entertainment release was dub only.
Yeah,
I remember seeing it in a convention, but...
But yeah, so probably sometime between then, between when I saw episodes 2 and 3, I started getting into the fan sub scene. I got my hands on the first, I want to say, 4 episodes of Metacross 7.
Yeah.
And yeah, it did not make a good first impression on me.
Hey, Adrian's woken up, and he's smiling.
Do you have something to contribute, Adrian?
No. Oh, I've covered this before. Yeah.
Okay.
My whole thing was I watched all of 7.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, I was given the guy that was selling the fan subs, the 50th generation copies.
Right.
He gave me Evangelion and Macross 7, and I was like, wow. Definitely going to watch Macross 7 first. Finished it all. Yeah. Watched all of Eva and wished that was Macross 7.
Right. So yeah, I think I eventually got my hands on episodes 1 through 16 of it fan subbed, and only at the end did it finally start to grab me. The story picked up, I think, Battle 7 transformed for the first time, and that was pretty awesome. But that's when the fan subs ran out and I couldn't find any more. Ended up through, I think it was someone on the news groups at the time. He got me most of the rest of the show.
Yeah.
But just in raw Japanese. And I watched it. I ate that shit up. But I knew nothing of Japanese at the time. So there's a lot. I didn't know what the hell was going on. But I don't know. I think I enjoyed it for the most part from what I remember. And yeah.
Have you not watched it since?
Oh, yeah, I watched it since.
Yeah.
But, yeah. In the end, especially when I finally got my hands on the fan subs, because it took a long time coming. Remember, it was Central Anime and Psycho Core that were doing the fan subs, and, yeah, they took their time with it, but they put out good stuff.
So you went from 7 then?
Yeah. Finished Plus, and that was pretty awesome, too. Somewhere in the middle is Macross 2, and... Maybe even...
Hey, Adrian's awake!
Ha!
Barely.
Maybe that was before Macross Plus, I can't remember, but yeah, that was just kind of, it's like, hey, this is more Macross, great, but it's kind of nothing special. Just, it wasn't amazing to me. Sorry, Adrian.
Piss off. Why isn't this a video podcast?
You can just smell the contempt on his face.
Yeah.
So, in between then, what, we're moving on to Zero territory, but somewhere mm-hmm. between then, Macross World would have come online, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I remember stumbling onto that page. 99. Yeah, I was just going back to college in 2000, I think it was, and I stumbled onto that page, and what really grabbed me is one of the members, I want to say his name was Chris Beretta, was putting out those 155th scale VF1 heads. And they just
right.
Yeah, and there was the VF1D that they never made, right. And the S&Js just look way better than the toys ever looked like.
Yes.
And I don't know. I remember just thinking, hey, he's casting copies with resin and making them even better than these ones he got out of from God knows where in Japan were. And I just remember thinking, hey, that'd be pretty awesome to be able to do. And eventually learned some of that stuff.
And that was when the whole garage kit scene was actually starting to boom, really.
Yeah. Actually, it really started...
Well, it started to end, maybe, around that time.
Yeah, probably something like that. I remember it kind of peaked around, like, the Macross Plus era.
Around that
time, like, it was probably between, like, 95 to 98, maybe. Because mm-hmm. back then, you had...
Studio Half-Hour?
Yes. Actually, Studio Half-Hour was a little bit later, but you had Club M, you had Yellow Submarine, you had Wave, and they were both all putting out a lot of stuff. If you just look at the Yellow Submarine stuff, they put out a almost complete line of everything Macross in 1/144th scale,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty small scale, but it was a very large line. They put out the Monster in that scale. And that was pretty huge. Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Wow.
Macross World came online, and as Renato mentioned, you were one of the first people to jump on board.
Yeah, I seem to remember even before they had a real forum, they just kind of had like a message board. You just kind of like didn't even have threads or something like that. It's kind of post messages, and it was kind of big.
Right.
Yeah, it's big club. It just had no organization to it, so I really didn't post to that.
Are you sure that's not the Usenet?
No, I don't think
Macross. This toy was out toys or something like that.
I don't think so. Maybe it was a front end for that, but I couldn't.
Because there were a bunch of people that came like at the same time.
Yeah.
All at once from that group to Macross World, and Keith was among them. Godmars and some other guy.
Don't even remember too well.
They called him the Holy Trinity.
But yeah, I just remember seeing that.
And Keith was always like that. Keith was always combative.
It's good to know.
Yeah.
So I remember I would read that, but not post to it. But then when the proper forum came online, I just kind of jumped on board right away and snagged the Valkyrie handle. I guess I probably couldn't think of anything better at the time. And actually, that was my handle on the bulletin boards, BVSs, back in the day. So,
Are you particularly active on the forums?
Not extremely. I read it fairly regularly, but I don't know. I just kind of don't find I'm not sure if I just don't find I'll have a lot to contribute these days, but yeah, I'll post and I have something to post, but not extremely frequently, I guess.
Well, I remember him mainly because he had all the really rare stuff, like even back in the day, like 2000, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
He was putting up scans of Macross Plus movie program, scans of some other stuff, and
yeah, I remember I couldn't do scans, but I took pictures of these old Macross calendars, like those poster size calendars.
Yeah.
I want to say they only did those for like 3 years or something like that. But you had like six posters, one for every other month of the year.
Yeah,
and those were pretty awesome.
You put up the MP3s of the Ticket Mega CD.
Yes. Yeah, as mentioned that theme earlier.
The tickets.
Yeah, that was
Macross Plus. And
that was. I think it's still the only CD that has the acoustic version of Tokyo Ghoul Love Hearts.
It is. Yeah.
And yeah, that was a big one of mine for a long, long time.
Yep.
And yeah, I actually found that on a BitTorrent site, and I promptly shat bricks when I when what was labeled as Totsugeki Love Heart short version was actually the acoustic. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. yeah, so I immediately went to Yahoo Japan auctions and found a copy for like 1,000 yen plus all the importing fees and all that, but totally worth it.
Okay. Yes, which is now included on the Blu-ray set. So
it's a good thing.
Makes it so easy to get off and into MP3 format.
It's okay, I have the CD. Hey, and I was walking down the street just now, I was telling Adrian about how I'd spent like, what, 15, 20 years looking for that CD. And he's like, oh yeah, I got two in my cupboard. Screw you.
I get this all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to go pull them out right now.
Do it.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yep.
Yay. Do you have the whole complete thing? Do they have the poster? I actually find a bunch of those. Not Macross, but At Labor ones in Nagoya, and I got them both. Nice photo opportunity.
The thing is, most of my CD players can't play that anymore.
My laser disc player can.
There you go.
Whoa, watch out.
Yeah.
It's got an interesting interview with someone. Kamori and maybe Amino as well.
Yeah, Amino's in there. God, that's so funny. Kawamori seems to have grown hair since then. Amino's lost it all because he wears a knit cap now whenever he appears. To tell people that FB7 isn't a movie, it's a rock show.
Well, Kawamori doesn't look like that either.
Yeah, but like he
hasn't grown hair.
He doesn't do the kind of semi comb over looking fringe.
No.
So, Ken, you're in town, among other things, for Wonderfest, and that was last Sunday, the 27th.
It was.
27th of July, and listeners may remember that last year's Wonderfest, as we discussed, was completely snowed in.
I mean, this winter's Wonderfest.
So oh, yes.
Yeah, sorry. It was still this year, yeah.
Yeah, it was still this year, wasn't it? Well, the last Wonderfest, yeah. It was completely snowed in. This being summer Wonderfest, it was pretty par for the course. It was pretty darn warm.
Yeah.
Now, what time did you get there?
I took the first train in. It got me there in line at about 6:30 a.m.
Oh, so you're in line for a good, what, three and a half hours.
It actually wasn't so bad, at least at first, because we were totally in the shade.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as the sun came up, it got warmer, and the shade really didn't help in the last hour and a half.
It's not the best first experience for Wonderfest, I suppose.
I kind of saw it coming. No. I kind of prepared for the worst.
So you got in there at long last, and I mean, impressions and shopping. What were you after? What did you get? What did you think?
So first want, along with everyone else, I wanted the T-Rex Wife 19 Super Parts.
Everyone wanted them, yep.
Absolutely. Of course, I didn't get one. I went in, I made a beeline for the table. When I got there, there was pretty much no one in front of it, so I thought, hey, maybe there's hope. As I'm walking up to it, I get there, there's a sold-out sign up. I asked just to be sure. No go.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah, I heard they were gone within about 9 minutes.
That's what they say.
And there were 40 of them, too, 20 in each color.
Really?
And normally I'm used to hearing about these kind of limited edition items being more in the 20 range, but... Mm-hmm. There were 20 of each color, which is how he got away with it.
Hmm.
And, apparently they just completely... And one popped up on auction already for about $600 plus.
Yeah.
So...
They actually just were, for those little parts.
Well, they actually were pretty sizable.
Well, it's just the thrusters that are big, but...
That's true.
Yeah. Because it's only four?
It's just four pieces, yeah.
Four pieces, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very nice looking kit. That wasn't unavailable, so when I went in line, I kind of made a little list, and I found a website online that had like basically a spreadsheet of all the Macross kits that were going to be there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They often do that.
You saw
that?
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't sure if it was just a Macross thing. I didn't find anything for any other series I was looking for.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was really helpful.
Mm.
It actually, like, had, like checkmark columns for which series it's from, if it's a character or robot or a spaceship or something like that.
Yeah.
The group name, the table number. So, yeah, really useful.
Hmm.
Way more useful than the huge guidebook they give you.
Hmm.
Right.
But, yeah, so I kind of spent my 3 hours in line just kind of making a list of the tables I wanted to hit and what they had, trying to find the most effective route between the stuff and more or less the order I wanted it in.
So you did all that while waiting in line,
yes,
right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, in fairness, I found the website the night before, but that was pretty much the extent of my planning.
Because you would need the book to have the map, right?
Yeah.
Or did you find somebody who, like, uploaded the map?
No, I tried to keep the map in the book, but in, like, no. 10 minutes in, just like...
Rip. Just rip it and then throw away the book, pretty much.
I still got the book, but yeah. Anyway, so from there, I found a group that had the... A Shrill Gnome Shuttle, and I think is Battle 13.
Mm-hmm.
They had this pre-painted display models, and Shrill Shuttle looked pretty good. I bought that. It was 10,000 yen. I wanted to look like Battle 13, but it just really didn't look... It just kind of looked soft and undetailed, and for 7,000 yen, I couldn't do it. Got that moved on. Next bit want was a group called 13B Spectres that's not many people seem to know about, but they make a lot of really, really great video game kits, like from, like
R-Type.
Yeah, yeah, it's like spaceships from shoot 'em ups and that kind of thing.
That sounds something that I'd be interested in.
I think you would. Yeah. So I've already had a few of the kits I got off Yahoo Japan auctions over the years. I got one of their new-ish ones. I think I want to say it debuted in the winter this year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called the Dragoon J2, I think, from Galaxian 3.
Mm-hmm.
Really neat fighter from spaceship fighter thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got that. I think it was 15,000. Let's see here.
Did you go to the Expertin booth? Was he there? Do you know that one? That's the guy that does the 1/100th scale Macross Valkyries that they're fully transformable.
Yes, yes.
He did a Milan this year.
Yeah.
I mean, this Wonderfest.
Yeah. I probably got that table maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours after they open.
Yeah.
And they're all still available, shockingly.
Really?
But yeah, they're all pretty expensive, though.
Yeah, his kits usually go above $250 to $300.
I want to say the average is right around 30,000 per kit.
Usually.
Really?
Yeah. But they're all color cast, which really doesn't do much for me, because if you're going to build a kit, I'm going to paint it.
Oh, okay. Right.
I mean, they look probably about a step or two below a pre-colored Bandai kit in terms of coloring quality.
Right, yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I mean...
You have to paint it anyway, maybe.
Right, because, yeah, you buy a $300 kit, you're not going to leave it as the stock pre-colored resin. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen.
Hmm.
Next, I went to a group. I still don't know the name. It's all in kanji. But there you go, that one.
Tokumu Junyokan.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Okay, so they had a few good neat spaceships. One of them was the Argenixu. Yeah, from the video from the video game Macross M3.
M3, the best one ever. The one that I just remembered.
That was,
I own it today.
That was the actual ships, right?
Yeah, it's a blue one.
It's the ship.
And I'd never seen them. Like, it took me a while to remember what they were.
Yeah, I had to look it up.
Well, they have a really, really messy line art picture to work with, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right? It looks so blurry on the screen.
Mm.
You really only see it in the opening, I think. I don't remember.
Really? Gotcha. Does it appear in the game?
Oh, yeah. I've only played it once for 5 minutes.
Well, the thing is...
it didn't appear in those 5 minutes.
Yeah. I actually just in the last month or so got a working Dreamcast, because I bought M3 and a Dreamcast at a game show in Milwaukee about a year ago, and I quickly realized that I overpaid for my dream for M3.
I overpaid for it.
In fairness, I didn't get the I think I paid about $50,000 for mine, but it was a limited edition, in all fairness.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Okay.
Didn't pay a cent. Downloaded it back on the day on IRC. Had to get The burner, the right burner, disc juggler.
Oh, God.
Do you remember those days?
Yeah, I remember.
When you had to put in the CD dot dot Q and all this crap. It took like 8 days to download. And then I think I had to have the Plexter drive. You had to have a specific drive.
Those were the good ones.
Plexter, disc juggler, and then you burned it. And made the GD-ROM readable on a DVD. Yeah. Is it DVD or a CD?
Yeah, all CD.
They're GD-ROMs. Just basically an overgrown CD-ROM.
Yeah.
Anyway, so other thing I discovered was the $30 Dreamcast I had did work. CD-ROM, or GD-ROM, rather, was busted. And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Download or not, 5 minutes into the game, not quick.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I bought a Japanese Dreamcast last month, and I loaded up and watched the opening a couple of times, and didn't really get any farther than that. partly because the controller I had, which is the one I got in the game show last year, barely works. It has some frayed wires. Like, you literally have to hold it upside down in order for it to make the proper kind
of because that stupid position of the wire. Gwen, what is the plan with that? Why?
Just calm down. You put the VMU in it, it's fine, okay? You should pick up a couple of secondhand controllers while you're here.
Yeah, I might just do that.
They're not that expensive and they're good condition in general.
Yeah.
I got the VMU? I got one of those at Hard Off.
Hmm. Yeah, looks like they go for like $10 or something like that. I might just do that. Anyway, but back into it. The guys who had the Argenix, they also had one solitaire kit of the SCF2 Mega Road.
Oh.
Yeah.
How big was that?
The box is maybe like that, maybe like 8 inches wide squared. And so anyway, I saw that. They only had one of them. So I asked him, how much is that? And he was like, Sanzen N.
I was like, really?
What? I mean, I actually had to,
that's 3,000 yen, but
yeah.
That's $30.
Right. Yeah. But my Japanese is not amazing, so I just had to kind of compute things in my head just to make sure I didn't just hear that wrong. And it's like 3,000 yen, $30. Okay. So yeah, got that too.
Wow.
Also a pretty nice kit. The casting is not amazing, but yeah, for Macross.
The Megro, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these are two Macross spaceships that you're not going to get anywhere else in any other form. So yeah, take that. Other one that I really wanted was a 1/72 scale of the Mulane Valkyrie in fighter mode. I saw it on the list. I knew I had to have it, but they didn't list the price. And I get there, and it's 23,000 yen.
For a couple of other thousand, you can get a transformable one.
Right. I mean, mind you, this was much larger. I mean, it's full 72nd scale, so it's maybe 10, maybe 11 inches long, something like that. Probably closer to 10, but whatever. But he only had 5 of them on the table when I got there, maybe half hour or so after the show started. And they sold very slowly. I mean, I couldn't pull the trigger on it for $230. So I was kind of like just waiting, hoping maybe he dropped the price. And he never did. Maybe an hour or a half hour before the show started, he'd sold out. And yeah. But oh well. I also got Frame Out Models. Here it is. They made a few really nice conversion kits for the Hasegawa ones.
Based on the Macross the Ride, right?
Yeah, that's one of them, at least. Yeah, actually, I think they're all Macross the Ride,
actually.
Yeah, they
should all be Macross the Ride. And they looked really nice. How much were they going for?
I think the cheapest one. I got the VFX Double Plus. And I want to say it was 7,000 yen. And,
And they have some version of the VF-19, right?
Yeah, they had a range of, I think, 6 of them, 8 of them, something like that.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe it was 4. It was some multiple of 2.
Okay. they were really neat. I'm trying to find the picture of them I don't have with me.
Yeah.
Oh, well. But yeah, neat stuff. There was another group there that had similar option kits. They had the Vast Pack kits for the YF-19s.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted the big booster kits that are on the Emerald Force Valkyries at the end of Macross 7?
Yeah.
I really wanted those, but they were sold out. They had another kit that had like the leg packs, but I'm not sure if they were part of the Emerald Force set.
Mm.
But yeah, I could have gotten those for, I think, like $50 or $60, but they didn't have the big boosters, so I passed on them.
Right.
Oh.
So, yeah. You've been wanting to visit Wonderfest for a while. You get in there. I mean, is it what you were expecting? I mean, what... How was it?
It was more or less what I expected. I just didn't... I wasn't expecting to be quite as big as it was.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I mean, I can't even begin to estimate how many people were lying in front of me or behind me. But, yeah, it was three huge halls. And, yeah, just lots and lots of people. And I was actually really surprised just how few foreigners were there. I mean, everyone was Japanese, it seemed.
Well, let's talk about Arcadia briefly, because that was, for me, I got there just after 10 a.m., and I had two major goals. One was to pick up the a bunch of shoulder pads, which we did. And those sold out within about the first 30 to 40 minutes of the show, but managed to get a whole bunch of those. So everyone's going to be, well, I'm going to just open all the boxes and make a big Godzilla sculpture with these shoulder pads.
Nice.
So anyways, there was that, and there was the Arcadia booth.
I must be really tired because I didn't get that.
There was the Arcadia booth, which of course had the VF-0D.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Now, the most important thing we must point out here is... The spelling? After having fixed the spelling of the name.
Wait, did they fix that?
Originally they did, then they messed it up again.
Is it still the Fenix?
No.
It's worse.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice. What did they call it?
The
F-H-O-E-N-I-X.
They are doing it on purpose now, just to piss me off.
I'm going to scroll with us.
You're kidding me.
No. Yeah. I'm sure that Mr. K did this. He was thinking, Renato might be there. I must change.
Is his real name Mr. J?
So they changed, originally it was Fenix.
God damn you, there Sam Panansky.
Then it was Phoenix. They fixed it. Now it's FH, which... is original, I'll give them that much. But anyways, there was a prototype there.
Yeah, fully painted and everything.
It was very blue.
Yes.
A lot of people have been discussing the blue.
Well, actually one person, but whatever.
but no, it was a very, very blue. It should be slightly more metallic, steel.
Kind of more subdued, more grey in the mix.
But I'm sure they'll change it.
I'm sure, it's very early. But having said that, well, I was around the Arcadia booth a lot, and... after doing the whole show, I came back and Tenjin was there, and he was actually saying to Mr. K that the colors, you guys all right? Like,
yeah, but at the end of the day, they have to get Kawamori to sign off on the colors officially, right? Yeah.
So wait a minute. That looks fine.
It's gonna be whatever he... What?
That looks Smurf-tastic.
Smurf-tastic?
It's... It looks like it's painted by somebody that... made a kit and painted it a little bit off.
When's it coming out?
Sometime next year?
Is that all they said?
That's all they said. Okay. It says on the actual sign, 2015. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, okay.
So sometime next year. But it was... No, heck no.
Okay.
I don't even want to speculate on how much this puppy's going to be.
Oh, yeah. How did you like the size? That thing is
massive. It is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it is really, really... I mean, sorry.
Well, I've got nothing to compare it with. Yeah. So.
Well, when I saw it here, because they had it downstairs.
Look at the wingspan.
They had it downstairs?
Yeah. Well, because in this building, they have the Miyazawa Moke.
Yeah, all right, so...
they showed it here. The
Adrian lives in the inner sanctum of... garage kit.
Yeah. Well, they had it there, and they had the actual colored version fighter, and there was a mock-up of the Batroid mode, which looked like it could have been 3D printed or something. I don't know. It was
It's got those metal parts. Looks like brass in the joints.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I don't think it's 3D printed. I think it's just
unpainted parts.
It's an actual resin, I believe.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. Looks like it's made out of stone.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Some
just needs a Michelangelo next.
But
to
I really like the proportions. Again, the legs they kind of managed to capture a little bit of that anime magic with the thickness of the legs, much like the 19 version 3 of the 19 did in a way.
I never had any of the VF-0 toys, so I don't know what the main differences are. Like,
yes, it is pretty big. I mean, it's a bigger Valkyrie than the VF-1.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, I would love one, but. Heck, who knows how much it will be. So they had that there. Then they're re-releasing, what was it, the VF-1J armor parts?
Yes.
which I don't think the actual thing they were going to sell was what they had on display, was it? Was that? No, that was it, wasn't it? Yeah. It's a picture of that. I'm not really sure what they've changed just, with the armor parts.
That's probably just the Yamato on display.
Let's see. Going through photographs. Yeah,
do they say it's on the same one as the Yamato release? Going by the photo, it seems like it's more of a darker navy. But it's just going by the photo. It might be because of the light.
Right.
But
yeah, I think
so. Well, that was there. That was an announcement.
Because they haven't released the 1J by itself, right? So it's going to be a set, I'm guessing.
Then there was the biggest announcement of the show.
Which is?
Well, the Milan base.
Oh, yay.
They actually announced, officially, the Milan base. Now, why is this a big deal? This is a big deal because a lot of people seem to be under the impression it had already been announced.
Yeah, I wonder why.
No, that was actually an April 1st joke where we got a cosplayer's Milan guitar and put it up with the help of Mr. K on the Arcadia booth and took a picture of it, so it looked like it was coming out. No one picked up on that April Fool's joke and everyone thought it was coming out. Yeah. And given the rate it takes them to make these guitars, no one really thought it had been strange that there's been no word on it for the past 4 months.
Right.
However, it was never announced. It was hinted at. But now we got the official announcement of it. And it will probably look a lot better than the cosplayer guitar that we put up there.
I don't know, though. That cosplayer, what did she make it out of? It looks
it was really
good.
Rough. Mm. It was pretty rough.
Really?
It's pretty rough, yeah, it's and pretty I had rough. A Photoshop photos, a lot of stuff out of it.
Yeah. All right.
But, I mean, yeah, it's still a good guitar, the one she did.
So, yeah, that's officially coming.
Okay.
So,
is it still ESP? Because they did
The Basso
the
one.
It's ESP.
No, they did the first Milan bass.
That picture of Sakurai Tomo holding it, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's not the first time that they've done that.
Since ESP.
Oh.
Now, is it actual working
and is that
bass?
Illustration is new? Because I haven't seen it before. Of Milan playing the bass, that is. For those of you who cannot see the podcast.
We have to do like a photo slideshow to go along with this.
Go ahead.
Sure. I would say.
You have a YouTube channel for something. I'm still not sure what, but there is. Oh.
One project at a time.
Wow. Shouldn't you firebomber that bird?
Real replica firebomber.
Dual gun pods, baby.
So wait a minute. So this one is just, will this actually work? Or is it just...
It
should work.
If it's ESP, then why would they...
Just checking, I don't know. I don't think that would sell as well as the Basso guitar. Sorry,
heck no. Yeah. I don't think so either. They also had Renato's favorite miniatures.
Yeah.
Which is the miniature Firebomber.
How does those look?
They look pretty good.
Yeah.
But remember, they already said that they're not sure what they would
do with
the
them,
faces.
Right?
The faces...
But he just has a boombox, man.
Yes, I know. They're not sure, because they have to mass produce them, right? And they have to rely on factory workers painstakingly painting each and every one of those. And so they're going to get some test samples or something, and it doesn't work out, then they might just ship them out with unpainted faces. Rather, the features would be unpainted. The face itself would still be skin painted, but not.
Okay. So, apart from that, they also had the SDF-1. What scale were these in?
They were non-scale.
The non-scale, right? But yeah, the SCF-1 looked really nice, and I'm not sure whether they sold out. I didn't check, but they had those pictures up on Twitter beforehand of like box.
It's not anime accurate though.
For me, apart from that, I checked out the Metal Box stuff, which was their super deformed Valkyries. They announced they're bringing out a VF-1J armored Valkyrie next year, which is looking very, very sexy for. Sexy as a super deformed thing could. Apart from that, they had their range. The Regolt looks amazingly cute. I know it's partly because of the paint job, but this is due to come out this September.
Yeah.
I'm actually really tempted to get one of those. They're really, really nice. Then they had, you know, the 1J, the S, and of course the Maximuria ones. And these are all, you know, I think it's partly... The reason the super deformed design works on them is they're painting on, like, they do this kind of semi dark paint schemes. They don't go too bright with them. So it almost gives them an air of, dare I say, grittiness, which is what A lot of people seem to like realism on your miniature super deformed transformable jets. but yeah, those look really, really nice. You know, apart from that, yeah, I just walked the halls and checked out a bunch of other merchandise. You know, it's a metal slug kit which looked really nice. Mm-hmm. A couple of video game kits, just figures in general. It's always fun to see what people are making, because, you know, naturally in our fandom, everyone focuses in, narrows in on the Macross stuff or whatever niche they're into, but there are niches that, and I use that word a lot in this podcast, don't I? There are segments of the of fandoms at Wonderfest making stuff you don't even believe they would make it, let alone that anyone would buy it. And you just walk along and it's like, there's some crazy stuff. So that stuff's always fun to look at.
Definitely.
So yeah, that was pretty much Wonderfest in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
So Ken, how much did you spend?
I haven't done the math, but I want to say it's close to $800.
Close to 800.
Yeah.
And a total of how many kits?
Hang on. Pull up the picture again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Actually, 12 and the Yamato 160th Dockery stand.
That's not so bad. Yeah. I mean, that means you kind of shopped around.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I really barely made it into the industry booth until the last, well, like, 5 minutes to check out the VF1D, and then the last maybe half hour or something like that. Everything else is just kind of like walking the floor, seeing what stuff's available to buy, taking pictures of everything. It's like, but most of the mecha and all the stuff that interested me.
Yeah, because I've bought kits for a lot of people, and a lot of times kits usually run. On average, like a really good kit will run you at least $150 minimum.
That's about right.
Yeah, and then if anything's bigger or elaborate, and that's just a stationary kit, anything that transforms.
Yeah.
If it transforms, which is kind of rare.
It is.
Yeah. You're looking at a minimum of $250, and not like the X-Pretend ones.
Right.
Those ones are really expensive. I bought a few for some people before, but they're really big collectors. They have to have everything.
Yeah, that's
but
not me.
They're just too, like, I get what you're saying about, you know, how they're casting them in different colors. Usually you cast them in a really like light blue and a white. It's always white in the light color.
Right.
I think this one was, the Milan obviously was white and pink, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd rather see them just cast in gray.
Yeah. Make them 5,000 yen cheaper and cast them all in just white or off-white resin, just like a normal person.
Yeah, it probably has something to do with, I mean, all this stuff is obviously, he does it in CAD. Because I think when you actually buy X-Pretend's kits, there are no instructions. You actually have to go to the website to get the instructions.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
And they're all basically just kind of renders. It's kind of arranged.
Yeah. So I've looked at his stuff. He did do male Zentradi power suits.
Yeah.
And those were, he was selling them. I don't know if he was one that did them or somebody was selling them at his booth a couple of years ago. Those look really nice. And those were cast in just green and black.
Yeah.
So, I think like his stuff.
The Valkyries, they transform, right?
And yeah.
So maybe he doesn't want people to be, to have lots of paint chips everywhere.
Probably.
Yeah, there was that. I mean, you can just kind of, like, say you get Millions of Valkyrie, you just kind of paint the, like, the base is pink and white and it's kind of detailed.
I mean, I'm
no, I think you got a good like point there. Kits. I've seen a lot of people make kits. I've seen somebody make a 1/100. 1S transformable kit, and when you have to paint it, one, it becomes real loose.
Yeah,
everything chips, and it just becomes a big mess.
That's why in general I really don't like transformable kits, especially resin ones.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, just do one thing really well, like you got a Hasegawa fighter, they look awesome and they're cheap.
Were there any talk shows? Any Macross related talk shows this time?
Not that I know of.
Not that I was aware of, no. I mean, I hung out at the Arcadia booth for a bit and a couple of other areas in that. But there was nothing Macross really related going down apart from the Zero D. And there were a lot of people there to see the Zero D. I mean, we had a fair few people clustered around that display case. They were giving out also, as we mentioned last year, remember the fans we got this year?
Oh, yeah,
because it's so hot, they give out the
fans to keep cool. This year there was a one that was a VFD, Zero D on one side and the Armored Valkyrie on the other side.
Oh, nice.
Kind of cool.
I didn't even get one of those. They got a VFD button.
Yeah, they're giving out the little buttons as well.
I got both, and I didn't even go.
I hate you too.
Those were kind of sweet. Freebies.
Yeah. I get a fan.
Mm-hmm. I gave you my fan last time.
Yeah, I know. I'm still using that, actually.
Gave it to you on the air as well.
Yes.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Wow. Yes, as everyone saw.
I'm not giving this one away. I'm keeping this one.
The armored side is really cool.
Yeah, I like the line art. Kind of. Yeah.
Bring it.
It's like the...
Home run.
It's like the Obama change poster.
Exactly. Yeah.
What?
It's just armored.
That's it.
You can make me bring it out.
Yes. No, I got it.
That does look really cool.
It is. It's nice. Awesome.
No, oh, I wish I could have gone just to get this.
That is beautiful.
This is always the best part.
King the fan?
I'm kidding the fan.
The freebie fan. Hey, they spelled it right on this as well.
Yeah. They spelled, yeah.
Perfect.
They just spelled Phoenix wrong on
they
the...
even spelled Shin Kudo right.
I thought you said Ashamed Kudo.
No.
Valkyrie. So on the fan, it's spelled right. They must have printed that poster last minute.
And it works.
Probably had...
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be terrible if it malfunctioned.
I'm just wondering how a fan could malfunction.
And I'm sure there are malfunctioning fans, and we have to do this good.
I'm just waiting for I'm waiting for the stem to just break.
Up top.
Hey, he's going to edit it out, though.
I don't care.
Hey, this is Richard, a.k.a. Goobaba. I am now Macross Speaker Podcast roving reporter. I am contacting you from the Little Tokyo area of Los Angeles. I've just been to Kinokuniya Bookstore here. And I am joined today by...
Jason, otherwise known as Jason C.
And this is the second time that Jason has been on the podcast. And I believe our only... transcontinental guest, in that we recorded him first in Tokyo and we're now recording him in Los Angeles.
I feel honored.
Yeah. Anyway, today we are going to be doing a bit of a puff piece, just talking about Macross the First, which of course is coming back on Comic Walker. It's been coming back, kind of, for the last 4 months. As they have been reprinting old ones, and this current month doing a general digest, as today is July 30th. But we're just going to talk about the story, kind of what we liked, what we didn't like, the art, a little bit of the history of it, where we think it's going, stuff like that. So it initially was started publishing in January of 2009, I think it's when the first issue came out, I think, in Macross Ace, the late Macross Ace magazine, which only lasted for 8 issues. Sorry, we've got sprinklers starting up here. I don't know how this will turn out. Anyway, you picked up that that first issue, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Did you... What was the main draw for Macross Ace for you? Was it Macross the First?
I think when I first bought it, I think I was just so happy that it was, you know, it had its own dedicated publication. You know, was my initial just, oh my God, I got to get this. And, you know, the fact that it was going to be coming out regularly was, you know, my biggest enjoyment out of it.
Barely regularly, though.
Yeah.
I think the first year it was like 3 issues.
Yeah, it was like, what, quarterly or something?
Then it became quarterly after that, yeah.
But when I first heard about Macross the First, I basically just thought it was going to be a manga adaptation of what we had seen, you know, original SCF Macross.
Well, the initial, I remember like on Anime News Network and stuff when they first announced it, they said that it would be focusing on Minmay. And everyone was kind of baffled by this. Like, was it going to be an adaptation of the series, or was it just going to be a series about Minmay? Which I think no one was really interested
in. And I totally missed that article. That would have been something good to know. But, I mean, either way, I was glad to, you know, when I heard that Mikimoto was going to be doing it again. Uh-huh. I was, and I know his art style has changed over the years, you know, a lot. Somewhat.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that was the most interesting part about it at first for me, and then of course, you know, you open up the ace, and then you start reading through it, and then you realize that, hey, this is completely different. And I think what really kind of intrigued me was just the little subtleties and changes, you know, like where people are recording the air show with cell phone cameras.
Right, yeah.
So that was my favorite part of it, just the little changes. But still, at that time, I thought it was, okay, well, there's some little changes, but it's pretty much going to be the exact same thing.
The first volume, or at least the first chapters, were pretty much exactly the same thing, even to the point where nearly all of the dialogue was directly from the show, which isn't true of the later books.
Right.
And then as it goes on, of course, it changes more and more. There's some stuff cut out. We get a lot of scenes of things that are not in the that were not in the series. Max in a Destroid, Kakizaki in an armored Valkyrie, science officers fishnet stockings.
Which I will not complain about at all.
Yeah, she's great. She's much better than Dr. Lang. So you have all of the books, right?
Yes. Two copies of each.
Okay. I have two copies of the first two, and I think I only have one copy each of the next three. There are five volumes so far, and it's going to be a while before volume six comes out because they need to come up with at least five or six new chapters for it. Anything specially stick out for you that you thought was, like, especially cool, or?
Well, there were actually, several of them. The first one, and we had discussed this a little while ago, was, some of the news and Trotty mecha.
Right.
Those bug-like looking things that kind of interlock and they hold the ship together and mm-hmm. keep it from getting away. I was amazed when I first saw that. I was like, okay, this is really different now. That, and then I believe it was the part where Max is actually dueling off against Kamjin.
Yeah.
That.
In a Destroyed Tomahawk.
Yes. That kind of threw me for a loop. I didn't expect to see that at all.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was expecting that. There are a few characters that get introduced much earlier than they do in the show, like Max, Kakizaki, and everyone's favorite, Kaifun.
Oh, yeah.
With poofy blonde hair now.
He almost looks like one of the characters from, I believe it's, is it Gundam 00?
Mm-hmm.
Looks very eerily similar to one of those characters.
He has kind of the same hairstyle as Full Frontal from Gundam Unicorn.
There you go. There's a crossover for you.
Yes. Anything that you didn't like about them?
You know, that's actually kind of a difficult question.
It is kind of for me, too.
Because there is some things in there, but I can't think of them off the top of my head. I guess...
Well, I got the books here. You can leaf through them if you want.
I guess for me, when it started off, you know, you're kind of seeing everything that you're kind of used to seeing, and it seemed like the transition was just... For that was a little bit too sudden for me as far as story-wise.
Okay.
Because, let's face it, you know, the story is over 30 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a lot of these people that are reading this, you know, at least over here are fairly, you know, versed in the series.
Yeah.
And it just seems like it goes from, you know, going one direction and then just next chapter, it's just totally flipped. And
yeah.
And now you have no idea what's going on. For me, story-wise, it would have been nice to see a little bit more of a smooth transition in that sense. It's not break. It's not a deal breaker by any means, but it's just one of those things that's kind of, you know, it's a little bit jarring if you're not used to that or not expecting that.
So you have two copies of each book. Do you speak any Japanese?
Not a word.
Do you read any Japanese?
No.
Did you feel that this was money well spent anyway?
Of course.
Okay.
Definitely.
There we go. See? Obviously, I think this is modeled on Gundam the Origin in a lot of ways. That one came out with the character designer and animation director doing it, and they created the Gundam Ace magazine solely for it. So, like Gundam the Origin, we get Macross the First, a retelling of the original story with a new magazine, Macross Ace, to carry it along. But I think the problem is Gundam Ace was pretty much a hit right from the beginning, whereas Macross Ace started strong,
right.
And just came out with 8 issues and then was gone.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, so we got the first 3 volumes of Macross the First out of that. Then we had a wait of about a year or so, and then they started up New Type Ace, which lasted less than 2 years and also folded. And we got volumes 4 and 5 from that. And now Macross the First is on Comic Walker online. The nice thing about it, again, is that, as we've said before, and which always bears repeating, is that Comic Walker is free. Anyone can access it anywhere in the world. You just go to... Now, let's see, is it... Well, we can check if it's Comic Walker, all one word, or if it's Comic Dash...
There's a dash in
there. I think so,
there.
Too. Comic-Walker.com, and all you need to do is change your language settings from English to Japanese, and Macross the First is there. It's not in English, but it's there. However, it's been 4 months, and we've only had reprints of previous issues. The story, as you said, it's kind of following along from the series, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, the general overall story, it's gonna follow it more or less. It's all the little things in between that, you know, that really start making it difficult the further you get into it.
And it's getting harder. I mean, I think one of the things that I said on Macross World a long time ago, and I think it was true then, was that if you know the story of Macross the TV series, you can more or less follow along with the manga just by looking at the pictures. You don't actually have to read anything. You pretty much know what's happening. It was true then, when we were up to, like, volume 2 or 3, but I'm not sure it's so true anymore.
Well, I in my perspective, not understanding any of this, not being able to read any of it, it is difficult, but if you actually pay attention to what's on the page and follow it along from where it starts changing, you can kind of get an idea of what's still there.
Right.
But, you know, if you're, you know, just going to kind of flip through and look for the cool pictures in there, it's going to...
And you'll find those.
Yeah, there's plenty of those. But if you do that, you're pretty much going to miss what's going on.
Right. But we're 5 volumes into it, and, I mean, each volume is about, I'm looking here, roughly 200 and some odd pages long, about 200. The story seemed really compressed at first. Like, in the first book, you get the first 2 chapters, and I think it covers the first 3 episodes.
Right.
Of the show. Volume 2 is very similar in that it covers the next 6 episodes, I think, or next 3 episodes, sorry, ending with episode 6. I think it ends with the Daedalus attack. And then the story starts slowing down. So that over the next three books, by the end of Volume 5, we still haven't had the Miss Macross contest yet, which was Episode 9 of the series. So I am kind of wondering how long this will end up being, how much added stuff will be in there. But one of the things that I think is kind of interesting about it, which I know I've mentioned before, is the way that Mikimoto is bringing back story concepts from the planning of Macross that never actually made it into the show.
Yeah.
From little things such as Minmay actually, like, delivering Chinese food to the bridge, to stuff like the asteroid cracker, which was an attack that they were supposed to be able to use that would destroy an asteroid, and some of the fragments had, like, to mess up a Zentradi cruiser.
As I flip through that exact part that's
yes.
going on right now.
And it's Minmay's idea. She comes up with it. So anyone said that she was useless? No, she's not here.
She saves the day other than just singing.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks like she's delivering some really good food, too. I'm looking
hungry again. We just ate, but we didn't eat ramen.
There she is. Hey, asteroid.
Then we get to the Mars chapter, which has a really big change, where Misa sees Ryber, and it turns out that there's some kind of time distortion that not only brings him back, but also shows us a VF Hikaru flying a VF-4 and the Megarode. I have to say this is an if, because if Macross the First finishes, because, again, it's killed two magazines so far.
It's cursed. Cursed.
It may be cursed, and there's a long lag between one magazine getting canceled and then finding its way to some other venue. I don't know if this is ever going to get finished, but if it does, do you think it might actually finally resolve the question of what happened to the Megarode?
You know, I keep hearing that, you know, Kawamori never wants to go back to that. And
but this isn't Kawamori. It has nothing to do
true,
with this.
True, but I've heard that for so long that I now just... Part of me still wants to figure out what happened, but another part of me is actually kind of accepted that I'm just never going to know.
Yeah.
If it does, hey, I'll be the first one in line to buy the book.
Yeah.
But, and as I do anyways, but...
Yeah, because I asked one of my friends who was really disappointed by the... they just disappeared. Resolution. Mentioning... What?
I was going to say, you know how I get through that? Mm. I picture myself in the story.
Okay.
If the people on Earth had no idea what happened to them, neither would I, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Just put yourself in their shoes. You have no clue what happened to them.
Nobody does. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, I pointed out the thing about, like, the time distortion in this, and I said, well, if we find out that the Megarode had jumped far forward in time, or something like that, would you be okay with that as an answer? And she said, yeah, yeah, that seems like it would be fine.
Macross 2. There you go.
Yes.
Pop out, what, 2080?
Right, yeah, yeah. That could be Macross 3.
There you go.
Right. As Adrian said, Macross 3, lovers thrice. One of the big problems with the series right now, though, is that, of course, we've only gotten up to episode 8. Minmay's birthday just happened, and the Miss Macross contest is about to. And it looks like Jamis Meron, the Hollywood actress, has undergone a serious makeover, if that's her, wearing the cowboy hat, flowered hat there. Which is probably good, because she kind of needs a reinvention.
Yeah, that hair was not working for her.
Right. But we got to that, and then we got a clip show titled Global Report that just went back and retold the story from the beginning. But also had, let's see, have you read Misa Hayase, White Reminiscences?
No.
Oh,
I
man.
I have not read it yet. Sorry.
Well, yeah. Jeez.
I have it. I have it. I haven't.
Oh, well, because I was going to point out that Reiber at one point sends, in the novel, and mentioned nowhere else, Reiber sends Misa a ship in a bottle made from Mars crystal, and he sends it to her back on Earth. And if you look, of course, so many of the pages aren't numbered here, but it does actually show up in Volume 5 of Macross the First, during one bit where Global and Misa are having a conversation. Yeah, there it is.
But see, that's a good little plug for me to want to get in and read it.
Yeah, so it's clear that, okay, so Mikimoto is pulling in story ideas from the planning things. He's pulling in stuff like this ship in a bottle given to Misa, which is just from the White Reminiscences novel. He mentions the Vajra at one point. He mentions the bird human at the same point. It does seem like he's trying to tie everything together.
Wait, who mentions the Vajra?
Bulldoza.
Oh.
Because there's the one chapter where Bulldoza is giving Lapham his briefing, which is also the episode which Gwyn likes because porn was added to it. Yeah, right here. He's talking about how there was a fold reaction from a few years before, like from a year or so before, on Earth, from before, or from, like, after the Macross had crashed, you know, but sometime before. He's talking about the bird human from Macross Zero folding out, basically. And he calls it a Queen Vajra-type fold.
Interesting.
Yeah. And there's a little footnote here explaining what the Queen Vajra-type fold is.
Oh, wow.
And it's, yeah. Yeah, the Queen Vajra mobile fortress. Queen Vajra mobile fortress type fold wave. The footnote says, before the launch ceremony on Mayan Island, the awakened bird human folded out.
So, okay, I have to ask this now.
Uh-huh.
Because I did not know this because it's all text.
Right.
So does that basically mean that the bird human was part of the same species or the same culture that might have created the Vajra, or are they their own species? And
the bird human was made by the protoculture.
Okay.
But the protoculture emulated the Vajra.
Oh, okay. There we go. So that would make sense.
Yeah. Anyway, after that, and after the clip show, then we get into a flashback to the Unification Wars, which is really maddening because it's not finished yet. We get three chapters, and these were the last three chapters of Volume 5 and the first three chapters printed on Comic Walker. So these ones you can check, again, on Comic Walker for free with added color to them, which was not in New Type Ace and is not in the collected book. But you've got VF-0s, you've got SV-51s, you've got a ship made of Mars crystal in a bottle. You've got Christmas. It's, I don't know. I was thinking initially that the story was taking too many detours, but looking at it all as a whole, like, in sitting down and, like, looking at the books rather than just following it month by month, it seems much more cohesive to me. I don't know. Do you think he's going off on too many tangents? Do you think he's trying to do too much here?
Before that little bit of information that you told me, I thought it was just like, okay, let's just go do a flashback of Zero because I'm tired of drawing VF1s. I thought that was Mikimoto's thinking, but you know, in mentioning the Vajra and the bird human, it could be that he's going to this flashback to kind of tie up everything in that, you know, in that little section of the Zentradi talking.
Yeah, but the flashback is still happening after Zero. Because Zero happened in, I think it's supposed to happen in September of 2008, whereas this is Christmas Eve 2008. So Zero has just happened. I don't know, maybe he'll bring in Mayan Island. That could be possible.
At this point, I have no idea what to expect.
Yeah, no.
And seeing and going through this flashback twice now, yeah, I'm pretty much stuck.
Right.
As everybody else is.
Anyway, yeah, so that's our overview of Macross the First, unless you have anything else you want to add about it.
I really want to know more about these little... little details of this thing. See, this is what I miss when I can't read this stuff.
Oh, one thing that I wanted to say about this is it's kind of interesting because we start off by talking about how Mikimoto's style has changed. This manga is the first manga he's done entirely on computer. He's not using any pen and ink anymore at all, which may be why none of the characters have noses. And also, I'm pretty sure that Mikimoto himself is not doing any of the mecha scenes. I think that's all his assistants. I think anytime there's a huge mecha battle in the series, that just means Mikimoto wanted some time off and let his assistants do everything. Anyway, okay.
So no computer, huh?
All computer.
Oh, all computer. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. It still looks great.
Yeah, yeah. He's not lost his touch.
I mean, even the art done on computer looks like it's drawn, which is very, very good.
Well, he uses a lot of Ziptone, like a lot, which is probably easier to do on computer than it was by hand, where you had to cut it out and press it onto the page. But yeah, no, the art looks spectacular. Everything and everyone is kind of updated, but generally not too much. You can still recognize who everyone is.
With the exception of Lang.
Yes, yes. The, who didn't even have a name in Macross originally.
Yeah, we're defaulting.
Right. Yeah, the science officer. Yeah.
Well, and Kaifun, too.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't know who he was at first until they actually came out and said. And it was just kind of like, huh, why is he on the Macross already?
When I first saw that character, I honestly had no clue who he was. And then I kind of had a suspicion that it was him, but why would he be blonde?
Right. Yeah, he's Chinese. That makes no sense. Okay. Misa doesn't make any sense either, though. I mean, she's Japanese, and she's got pretty light hair, unless she dyes it. Anyway, I guess that wraps up our Macross the First overview. So this has been Gubaba and
Jason C.
And again, the roving reporter here in Los Angeles, California, folding out.
What was the topic?
Yeah.
Resin Kit Life, is that what it is?
Yeah, I gotta go home.
Garage Kit, the way things are these days. Yeah, I mean, especially when I came here in 2005, mm-hmm. I think the whole mecha resin kit mm-hmm. era was pretty much over. Yeah. There was still a lot of enough hobby stores around that still had a lot of the 90s kits mm-hmm. and the stuff mm-hmm. that came out in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Wave stuff.
Yeah, a lot of wave stuff.
Yellow Submarine.
But then around that time in 2005, the PVC figures were starting to get more popular. Mm-hmm. And they're getting a lot more elaborate and everything was getting pre-painted.
Yep.
So when companies like Good Smile was starting to put more stuff out, CM's, which is now gone, and Max Factory was doing less kits because Max Factory was doing kicks as well.
Yeah.
Kits as well. Yep. And they've even gone away from it because they used to do a lot of soft vinyl kits, resin kits, and now they just do, well, they do Figmas and a lot of robot stuff.
Yep.
But all these hobby stores have either gone away, or they're still there, and they still want to charge you the same price for that resin kit that they've had for 20 years now.
Right.
Does resin hold up that well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll store indefinitely.
Yeah.
The thin parts can work with heat, but you can bend them back really easily with more heat.
So they can be stored indefinitely, which is why most people I know buy them and then never actually get around to building them.
Well, that's part of it.
Because we met the first time was probably around 2007.
Yes.
And you came in, and I had already been living here 2 years. So I was like, oh, have you been to this? You already had a list of where you wanted to go.
More or less.
And there was just maybe two or three shops that I've known that I've found from just looking around.
Yeah.
That I've either pointed to you to or I took you to.
Yeah.
Since then, took
me to Leonardo, which is amazing, and now it's shell of its former self.
Leonardo was amazing. Uh-huh. It was this four-story building with a basement level. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I first went in there to the basement level, it smelled like toxic mold. It's just all these old issues of Hobby Japan from the first issue, all these defunct hobby magazines.
Yep.
And I remember I found a stack of the old Imai product catalogs, like the Macross ones. And I sent those all to Macross World to give away. I bought them for like 50 yen a piece.
Nice.
And they would have the resin kits. They used to have good prices.
Yeah, they had a bunch of them. I can't remember what I bought there. I just remember they had a Club M 148 Ultimate Detail Valkyrie in the showcase. I want to say it was around $500. I didn't buy it because just didn't have the money back then. But yeah, this had a lot of crazy awesome stuff.
Yeah. But I think around 2007, that's when Wave, Yellow Submarine, they always had resin kit stuff.
Yeah.
And they finally were selling off all their stuff. And I had posted on Macross World.
Yeah, I remember that.
They had, I just put a picture, and it was the Yellow Sub Destroids, like the Spartan, I think. The Tomahawk and the Zentradi male power suit.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were blowing them out, like, at $15. And I was telling people, like, yeah, they're $30. Yeah. I'm going to get some money out of this.
Yeah.
I ended up buying them all for all the members, mostly. Yeah.
I got a few members, too. I want to say I got one of each, like, three Destroids and one of these suits.
Yeah. But I personally collect resin kits, like their trading cards, but I have never built one.
Yeah. No, I have. It's a short list of kits that I've actually finished, and nothing too elaborate.
Okay. Have you bought any, Gwen? I'm surprised.
No, they're not really my deal.
Really?
No. I don't really even have much in the way of plastic models. I'm much more of a. I'm not even that much of a toy person. I enjoy a good toy.
No, you're not.
You enjoy keeping them in the box.
See, you guys can synchronize that comment next time. See, I enjoy having a half-decent range of them, but I'm by no means... It's not my main thing. I'm not one of the people who has to have all the 29s, all the Frontier range, all their Purple Squadron or whatever.
I recently became that guy.
Really? Hi, that guy.
I have all of the Emerald Force Valkyries now.
Nice.
All three of them.
Duplicates at all? Yeah.
Yeah, I got two 19Fs, but it's just such a great toy. I think I only have one garage kit, one resin kit, and that's the TECT or TECT or however you read it. The Milan sound booster.
Oh, cool.
One that's like the extra part for the old
Bandai
kit? Yes.
Yeah, Tech made a ton of those.
They made a lot, and I remember, this is going back now, back, I think, when... just when those had come out, there was this fanzine in the UK called Macross and Mecha, published by Fifth Triumvirate Productions, which is made up of Ollie Barder, who is on Facebook, and he's your, maybe not your friend, well, he's our friend,
Fine.
Made up of Graham Parks, who later went on to found some site called MacrossWorld.org, I think.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, we'll look it up.
Huh?
And Rick Newman, who was the guy that did the well, he didn't do the fan subs, but he did the fan sub copies for me of Macross 7 and Dynamite 7. He's going to be weird now, but God bless his soul.
And I hope he's listening.
Yes, I'm sure he is. Yeah, so that they published this thing, and they had this list of all the teched garage kits that they had, and mm-hmm. I remember ogling over the really bad photocopy quality black and white photos of the full armor Thunderbolt and everything, mm-hmm. and Ken here just showed me a photograph of the box.
Oh yeah, totally got one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he's got stacks of stuff, and I said, yeah. "How many have you built?" And he said, "Zero." Yeah. So yeah, I mean, those kits, you really rarely see them built, right? That's but true. When they do, they look good.
Yeah, they're not
those
bad.
Guys on Macross World, they're very talented. Think
a lot of people like Adrian and collect them like as collectibles and less as I think projects to build.
I collect them for two reasons. If it's a Wonderfist kit, that maybe it's a Macross 2 kit, or it's a mecha that hasn't really ever been made,
yeah,
I'll buy it because either it's not popular, and this one guy's only going to sell three of them, and then the license is done, yep. And then you're not going to see the kit anymore. I'll buy it for that reason. Or I'll go to a store and find a really old kit that hasn't been made into a toy, and I'll buy that just because that's the only way you can get that actual design in some kind of form to put on your shelf if I was to ever build it. Right. So, 'cause I have a Metal Siren, I've got VF2SS,
Still gotta get some of those.
The VFJ2A, I've got that.
Yeah, I've got the VF2J in Betroid mode. I never get the fighter. Always wanted one. Same thing with the 72nd VF2SS.
I have that. I have all of the SSs, but the 2JA, the mm-hmm. fighter one,
mm-hmm.
That one's Yellow Silk. Who made that wave?
I can't remember. Retro, I think. No.
No, that's the 172.
Home run.
Yeah. No, the Musasia made the 72nd VF2SS.
Alright, so yeah.
Oh, nice.
The B Club one, the fighter of the 2JA. Yeah, that's when it shows up on Yahoo Auctions,
mm-hmm.
it goes for at least a month still.
Yeah.
So
that's 10,000 yen.
Yeah. Yep. Ooh, T Rex kits. So. Oh, this is the one I bought.
The symbol, yes.
Yeah.
And this one, I've never actually seen it close. The one, this is the red.
Yeah, 100. Yeah, you're gonna laugh when you open it up.
Yep, the box is way too big.
Yeah.
Actually, there's two kits in there.
Okay.
Which is which? This is some Hong Kong kit. Like an Obari style VF2SS that I got.
Oh, this is the one with the from the eye catch, the kind of super dramatic pose.
Yeah, I put this on Macross World once, and Graham was going to try to find whoever made it because there's an address on here for Hong Kong.
Huh.
So
I kind of be surprised if it still existed, but yeah, this retro is a pretty nice kit. Casting's really nice.
It's very, very tiny.
Yeah.
But yeah, yes. So all my kits, basically, I just store them.
Yeah.
One day, I want to build them.
Yep.
Because they don't do anything in the box.
True enough.
But if you have never built a... Building a regular model kit, just mm-hmm. putting it together, not painting it, it looks all right.
Yeah.
Actually knowing how to paint and primer, it looks better. A resin kit, if you don't know how to do any of those things...
Yeah. With kits like this, especially with lots of thin, spindly parts, like you gotta clean up the castings. It can be misaligned or something like that, or air bubbles and voids. You gotta pin the parts to add strength to them. There's definitely steps involved.
Yeah, you also gotta kind of know how to. If you shave too much stuff up off the kit, you have to figure out a way to fill it back in.
Yeah,
and then make it right. Yep. So, yeah, they're a little bit intimidating, but I do plan one day to. Build maybe one.
So the good thing is As long as you don't screw it up too badly, they're pretty easy to just strip the paint and start over again.
Yeah. Well, because they're pretty much indestructible.
Yeah, pretty much.
Unless
as long as you drop it. Well, yeah. Well, even still, a decent quality resin kit is going to have good enough quality resin. It's going to take some stress before it breaks. Whereas if you have some kind of... a lot of the older, especially crappy recast, these are really crashy. Almost like a polystone resin. Just super brittle.
Mm. Okay, so, Ken, I've got to ask. So, yeah. When would you say your first kit was that you ever got?
Oh, I can tell you exactly.
Do you remember your first?
Was it Macross?
Yes.
Okay, what was it?
Well, actually, maybe not my first kit. I remember getting a crappy plastic kit of, like, the Stealth Fighter from, when I was, like, 10 or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, but I remember being at a... back in Chicago, we got a chain of comic stores called Graham Crackers. And once in a while, they would have big sales where all the locations kind of pool all the crap that they can't sell and bring it to one of the locations to have a sale over a day or two. And so I went to one of those with a friend of mine from high school, and there I found a grand total of 3 Macross kits. They're all RE, all 1/100. I think it had 1 fighter and 2 drill walks. And I just had no idea that Macross kits even existed. Yeah. So it's kind of like a brain exploding moment. So, yeah, they're all super cheap too. So I went home and put them together. Not snapped together. So yeah, actually had to go and buy some glue. And I think 2 of them were VF1Ds, and they didn't come with decals for the orange parts, so I had to go to the hobby store, buy some Tessa's orange paints, do my best, looks like crap anyway, don't care. And yeah, that was actually the first physical object of Macross, of Valkyrie, or something like that I ever had.
I remember getting, I think it was a 1J,
yeah,
and trying to paint it white with Tester's paint. With a brush.
Yep. I remember I had it was also another one of those 1/100 series, but I got a Rory Fokker fighter type, and I was super excited about that one. It's my favorite and all that. But it wasn't molded in white plastic. It's just kind of this like pale green. And so I had to like paint it white and brushing it just looked like crap. I tried it. Mm. I bought cheap airbrushing and didn't know how to, didn't even know to prime, so it was ever. Paint was just pooling up and like even crappier.
Yeah.
A lot of the late 70s, early 80s kits were in that really pale lime green color.
Right.
It's really bizarre. Like, uh-huh. The first Gundam was like that too.
Yeah, I remember I had that kit. The same way. I could never make it.
Me neither. By the time I finished coating it with white, it was like some really gummy kind of finish, and it looked horrible.
No. It like took 3 coats of white primer to get rid of it.
It's funny that you said that finding that Macross kits existed was a mind-blowing moment.
Yeah.
It wasn't a mind-blowing moment for me. It was just like, why? For me. Because I was looking for toys, and I grew up, with Transformers and stuff, much like you said you did.
Yeah.
But I knew of Robotech, and I had the 155 toy, and I had like the pencil sharpener Valkyrie toy as well that transformed. So I just thought that any anime that had transforming robots would be toy driven, and I always thought that kits were for much more realistic stuff. But Valkyries didn't exist, so why the hell would there be kits of them? Yeah. I was already making kits of like the DeLorean from Back to the Future. I had a kit of the Titanic. I wasn't very good at any of them, but I did enjoy making them. So when there were Macross kits, I was like, okay, well, I can't find toys of this stuff, so I guess I'll buy these ones, but what's the point? And when they had like non-transformable ones, like the Strike Valkyrie fighter mode only Roy Fokker, I'm like, why? Again, this is a transformable design.
Yeah.
So it was a really, really like stressful moment for me, actually. not mind-blowing.
So frustrating.
Yeah, it was very frustrating. Well, and then I went to Sheffield in the north of England, and I met Rick Newman there for the first time, because he was going to Sheffield University, actually. And I went to... The reason I went there is because there was this fabled place called the... the Sheffield Space Centre.
Hmm.
And it was basically a sci-fi model kit and book shop.
Mm-hmm.
And they had lots of Star Trek stuff. But this was right when the anime subculture was starting to come into full bloom. And mm-hmm. so they had the Macross Plus and Macross 7 movie program there.
Mm.
And I remember Rick was there and he took it off the shelf and flicked through it and said, yeah, this is as good as bought. And took it to the cashier and got it for himself. And I never saw that book until last year, again, when I got it. But yeah, I mean, I bought maybe £300 worth of, like, so what's that, $600 worth of kits on that day.
Wow.
Quiddlin' Rao. And I still haven't made all of them. I gave some to my brother. But I made a bunch of them, yeah. Mm. And I painted stuff, and I did all that stuff. And now, you know, I know that Richard is the one who buys the kits and likes to collect them, especially for the box art stuff.
Yeah.
But I have not bought a kit for over 10 years, unless you include the that sound booster I just told you about.
So when we keep hearing that sales of plastic models are in decline, it's because you've stopped buying them.
Right? Probably.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, I mean, I've moved on to the toys now, because, you know, what was happening while Garage Kids was starting to get phased out mm-hmm. towards the beginning of the 2000s, or the mid-2000s rather,
yeah.
Wave and all those people left, Bleak B Club disappeared,
mm-hmm.
And those shops themselves started disappearing, was when the high-end
Yamato started coming to the fold.
Yamato, all that stuff started coming in, so it really just got replaced with that.
So, do you think you'll be coming back again for WonderFest?
I will be trying for summer of next year. No promises, okay. But yeah.
Really, another summer? It's not worth waiting a little longer ago for the next for the winter after next?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see what happens.
Not so, sure yet. Lynn, you said you didn't think it was going to be that big.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. Like I said, I really didn't know exactly what to expect, but the grand scale of things was, beyond what I expected.
Yeah.
Actually, also really didn't expect so many tables to have so much, like, used kits. Like, stuff that used to be on store shelves.
Yeah.
Not just stuff people produce in, like, in as individuals or clubs or something like that.
Yeah, because they also have a flea market section. Well, it's not a section. It's just kind of...
They're interspersed.
So people are selling flea market stuff. People are selling old kits because they basically just want to be able to be in the room when it starts. So they got to have to sell something.
I hadn't thought about that either.
That's a lot of reason why you'll see older kits, because they're just selling stuff out of the collection and they need to have something on their table.
Yeah.
But no, if you go to WonderFest, you can get a good deal on old kits, definitely. Yeah.
So before we wrap this up, is there a, for you as a collector...
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Macross resin kits, is there some kind of holy grail, something you really, really want and have yet to get? How big is your collection, would you say?
It's pretty extensive. It spans two whole closets.
That's pretty big.
Right now, as far as grail kits, not even really comes to mind, except the 148th Club M, the Ultimate Detail. And even then, that's not as big of a one as it used to be now with the Hasegawa. For a long, long time, my grail was the 1/10,000th Excellium from Gunbuster.
Oh.
That one took me a good 10 years to find.
All right, then. Well, look, Ken, thanks for dropping by. And we can, we can have you on again next time you're in town discussing the next WonderFest.
One of those, yes.
Hopefully we'll know what's coming after the 0D by then, and we can actually have a 0D.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
With correct spelling, even.
It might happen.
And we can play with it while wearing our shoulder pads, guys. Do remember love shoulder pads.
Sure.
And, so, anyways.
But yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Anytime.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, this is the Speaker Podcast crew signing off.
Plus one.
And folding out.
Folding in. Where are you going? When are you coming home?
Richard.
Dun-dun.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-